don't give a damn if it's 9 a.m. My football team's got me drinking. My football team's got me drinking. My football team's got me drinking. Give me beer or whiskey, wine or gin. Anything to shake this mood I'm in. My football team's got me drinking.
Back at it again. That feels nice. You guys missed. Back at it again. Oh, it feels so good. Back at it again with the Blue Testament crew. Here for another Shades of Blue soccer show. I missed you guys. You guys. Like, you listening. I missed you. But also, you guys in the studio, too. I missed you guys. We have snuck back in the studio to recap the offseason that was done in the blink of an eye and argue about this season. So, I am your host. My name is Cody Bradley, and I have in the studio with me tonight...
Bad Bell.
Yeah, there he is.
That was a weak throw. You didn't even look at me like, hey.
I was staring at you the whole time.
And Mike Kuhn.
Mike is here. Mike, how many of these have you done in your lifetime?
With this one? With this group? Zero.
Yeah. But
zero.
Historically, you started it.
Yes, historically, Thad and I started way back when, from the byline to the back post, back when we each had our own separate sites.
That's right.
Many, many, many moons ago.
Long ago.
And we did it all off a voice recorder.
Yeah.
Sitting on a child's table in my basement.
Or sitting in between us in a car.
Yeah, we did that a few times. Yeah.
In a car, wow, that's pretty good. But that's better than over the phone, which it was for a while here.
Yeah, it depends on the phone.
I was on a few of the phone ones, and it was not easy.
Yeah, phones are never easy. I've done those, and it's hard to read other people and when to stop talking, when to start talking.
Yeah, it doesn't ever sound good.
You always have the dead air silence waiting for somebody to say something.
Well, when Cody doesn't give you a visual clue, it doesn't help there either.
God dang it. Anyway, how's the off season been, gentlemen?
Is there an off season?
Yeah, we're
it's just busy.
We're a week away already.
Not even a week. They leave Sunday.
Yeah,
the team takes off for Arizona on Sunday. So
that's right.
There's player availability Saturday morning.
It's getting real. Thad, tell me something about your off season.
It was actually really good.
Why? Well, how so?
This may sound horrible, but daughter went on a trip to Florida with her school. So I had almost a week at home with the wife alone.
Nice. Why was she going to Florida?
Schools in Lee's Summit, band marched in the Citrus Bowl parade. The choirs sung at some big thing at Disney, and the orchestras did workshops with the Disney musicians.
Nice. Wonderful. Good for her.
Yeah.
Mike.
Yes.
You're here, and it's a weeknight, and
yes,
that is like normally something we're not used to.
No, it is not.
We always try to get Mike on, and he's like a dad and like got a real life and like real important things to do and doesn't have time to come in here and hang out.
Between dad and coaching and the half dozen other things my kids do, it's not easy to find free time.
I believe that.
And wife telling you can't go.
Well, that too.
I don't envy it at this point in my life, I must admit.
There's lots of pluses to it, though, isn't it?
Yes. I enjoy the coaching aspect. It's a lot of fun.
Dad's trying to make up for the fact he just said he was happy that his daughter left town for a long time.
Actually, I'm the one who really enjoys her being around, but it was nice to just have some time with the wife.
Well, very nice. Okay.
How about you, Cody? Off season?
My off season has been good. I've just worked a lot. But the holidays were very good this year. A long blur. It was kind of a blur. But it was fun.
Anything special?
Nothing particularly special. The Chiefs have been consuming my life working for the Chiefs Radio Network, so.
Well, that should be over Sunday.
Oh. And the game's on Saturday. But we're not going to talk about that.
No, it's wrong team. Wrong podcast for that. Wrong
sport. Yeah, but I'm fine with putting it out there in the world. Like, if we say it out loud that they're going to lose because everyone thinks they are going to lose, then maybe it'll break the jinx.
In fairness, they have an amazing quarterback. So
I do. I actually do kind of want them to win. Well, in years past, I honestly have not cared at all. But
it can't get any worse than some of their other playoff performances, specifically against the Colts. Damn you, Lynn Elliott.
Okay.
I'm old enough to where that crushed my childhood. So give me that.
I'm old enough that I was laughing at it.
Yeah. Well, I was 11, 10, whatever. No, wait, 96. I was 13. There we go.
So one good thing from pointy ball playoffs last weekend was Saad Abdul-Salam's off the hook a little bit.
Oh, yeah, the double doink.
Yep.
That was great. You know he was like somewhere like blushing. Because it, like, brought it all back.
Well, did you see Benny Failhaber tweeted at him about it?
Oh, he did at him? I didn't know.
Yes, he did tweet at him telling him he was off the hook, finally.
Nice.
So Benny made sure to rub it in just a little bit, little bit at him on it.
So that was Thad stealing Benny's joke?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But actually, I'm going to undo that now because I don't think he's off the hook because that guy actually got a little tip on that football. So,
oh, they did? I didn't watch that closely.
Yep, guy got a little tip of the fingers on that ball. So if the keeper had got a little touch on that ball, then we could maybe say we don't blame Abdul-Salam. But nope.
Not quite. Come on, we can move past it. Enough of the double post. We're a better team now.
Well, speaking of the double post, we were going to talk about the players that are in to sporting this season.
Yes.
Nice little segue there.
Well, we were going to do players out. Oh, yeah.
Well, players in. We can go either way. One of the players in was involved in that double post game, too. Actually had a goal in that game for Portland.
Ronnie Wallace.
Yes. Mr. Wallace.
That was a very good segue.
Thank you.
Ronnie Wallace, first one in.
So you're shocked at Mike actually knowing something here? Come on.
Yes, Rodney Wallace, the first one in on December 14. He was the first one, right?
Yes.
I think so.
Yes.
A very fast free agent signing.
Yep. Defender / midfielder.
/ winger.
Where do we see him fitting in?
I think that, I think, honestly, he's a player that I've always thought would do really well in Vermes' system. He does well on the wing. He gets up and down the field. Production obviously was a little off last year. The year before, he had a decent season with NYCFC. I think this year he's probably going to be predominantly Seth's backup or challenge Seth for minutes at left back, at least until Madranda's back and we figure out where we're going to play him again.
Yet so another Seth backup.
Yeah, he's like the 10th guy to come in and challenge Seth for playing time, right?
Eventually somebody's going to beat him out. I don't think Seth has the staying power of DeMarcus Beasley. I don't think Seth will be playing when he's 52.
Right.
Yeah. But anyway, Wallace could be... could be a left back, could be a left winger, could be a left midfielder-ish.
Trader Pete, he likes them versatile.
But probably winger / defender left back.
All right, in a trade, Eric Hurtado from Vancouver. Do we see him as backup to Nemo?
Actually, I think he starts.
Or is well so. Does Vermes see him as backup to Nemo to start?
I think it all depends on what happens in preseason.
Yeah.
At the beginning of last year, everybody was thinking Rubio starts and Shelton was a sub or defensive replacement kind of guy, and it turned out to be the exact opposite most of the season. So I think this last year we had the whole. Who should start, Shelton or Rubio? And I think this year we're going to have the whole Hurtado or Namath debate.
All right. Well, we're going to come out swinging with 2 goals and 1 assist that he had last year.
Screams Kyrie Shelton, doesn't it?
Exactly. Not his exact stat line, probably.
I think Kyrie actually had two assists.
Kyrie, I think, had one or two more assists. Yeah. But no, Vermes in the press conference after the trade with Vancouver, he talked up Namath. He talked up him as being the guy. But stuff since then, articles written by the league's website and everything, seems to point to Hurtado maybe being the favorite to start that. That, in a sense, changes my feelings a little bit on the trade. I don't think Hurtado's a starter in this league. I just don't think he's good enough to
be. Did you think Shelton's a starter in this league?
I thought Shelton could provided something more on the field than Hurtado does. And Shelton was another player that I thought was the type of player, when I saw him drafted, I thought he could do well in Vermes' system. I don't feel that way about Hurtado. I don't feel like he has the ability that Shelton does to play the way Shelton does, which means another tweak of the Vermes 4-3-3, likely again next year with Howard, which honestly we were probably going to change anyway with Namath as the point forward either way. So either way, we are likely going to see a tweak to the 4-3-3. I don't rate Hurtado. I never have.
Yeah, but can you rate Namath right now? Not 3 years ago, right now.
Not right now, no. I can't rate Namath either. But again, that points to what has become, well, to use a Chiefs reference, that's become the Chiefs drafting a quarterback is Sporting needs a forward.
Yeah.
It's the same argument year after year for the Chiefs. It was, we need a quarterback, we need a quarterback. And for Sporting, it seems to be, we need a forward, we need a forward. And
Well, I hope the trend continues. I hope we follow in those same footsteps. That'd be great.
I understand Hurtado may not be the same as Shelton. But a lot of what people have been saying about him was he runs all day. He's willing to do all the defensive work, which is exactly why Shelton was able to be effective in there, because he let everybody else do all the offense.
The big difference between Hurtado and Shelton, though, with Shelton and Hurtado both willing to do the dirty work, Hurtado doesn't have the body to do the work that Shelton did up top to create that space for Shalloway, for Russell, for Gutierrez to push forward. He doesn't have that sort of body type that will enforce his will on center backs and create that space.
He is just 5'10", but I feel like he's pretty, isn't he pretty solid? He's not very strong. I was thinking he had some muscle.
He's solid. He's the guy that scored the lone goal in the 2017 when Vancouver had in Kansas City on that quick counter ball over the top. So he's a bit more speed, I think, than Shelton is, but he doesn't have the body to go up against the Kendall Wastons, the Justin Glads, the Chad Marshalls of the league.
Now, Kyrie was a guy who I really like, but I don't think he played as big as what he actually was.
I don't think he did either, but he was able to, and I don't think Hurtado, like the example I'll give you is Vancouver, the game in Vancouver this past season, the Shalloway's first goal, when ball over the top, Shelton was able to hold off the defender, not even really using his body that much, but was able to get his body between the guy and the ball, and Shalloway was able to get onto it and finish. That's the type of play that Shelton was good at, was being able to hold defenders off, and I just don't see that out of Hurtado in what I've seen of Vancouver.
You're not going to see that out of Namath either.
That's very true.
Oh, we need a striker. Oh, man. Okay, and let's just keep the train rolling here. How about Botond Barath? Barath. How are we saying it?
That's a good question.
This is America.
Hungarian number 3.
This is America. Do both of those count?
Just don't call him Borat.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fun name to say. Botond Barath.
I got to try to get like Vermes to say that. like the accurate way. Of course,
yeah,
he doesn't ever say creuser the right way.
No, he doesn't. He still mispronounces that, we think. So, okay, Hungarian defender, another Hungarian.
He's spent his entire career with Honved, Budapest Honved in Hungary. Made it onto the national team. I think he has a couple appearances that he made just this past year in League of Nations play, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think he did.
I know he has only a handful of caps, and I'm pretty sure they both came this year or this past year, yeah. 2018,
yeah.
In League of Nations play.
Under head coach Marco Rossi.
I can't remember if he actually played, but he did, yeah.
Yes, three appearances in the UEFA Nations League this past year. Mike fist pumped.
Because I'm right again. I like being right.
Yes, don't we all? But, okay, so is he going to challenge either the captain or Ike?
Well, Vermes, again, going back to the press conference when these guys were all sort of introduced, Vermes has said he wants to have two deep at every position with the three competitions this year, the more condensed schedule. That would presumably mean that Vermes is going to actually do the dreaded R word this year and rotate.
Right.
But I think we'll see Beisler and Borath some. I think we'll see Fontas and Opara. Or this could also be could have been a signal for the long rumored Opara trade that came up with Jeff Carlisle, I believe, earlier this winter.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's a signal for it, but I think it's just it would make it feasible. But I think there's going to be two factors to Vermes making that trade. One, somebody's got to give him a deal that makes it worthwhile. And two, he's got to feel he has somebody there because it's not like you can just like throw away a forward and have somebody else score. If you throw away all your central defenders, you're screwed. You know what I mean? So that may have been what Emiliano Amor was for last year, which didn't turn out so great.
Well, and we spoke about if somebody made a deal. Speaking of Carlisle, he had actually posted today, Thursday as we're recording this, that Vermes had only gotten one deal. Or one offer, I should say, yeah. For Opara, and it was not up to his liking compared to other deals for, like, the Kendall Waston trade.
Yeah, and Opara should be above Waston.
Well, Opara's younger, lower salary. He's under contract for longer, I presume, now because he just signed an extension last offseason or a new contract last offseason. So,
plus, I think he's better all the way around.
Well, that too, but...
Wasson's meaner.
That too, but I'm just saying there are actual tangible evidence of a deal for Opara meaning more money for Sporting in terms of age and contract length and salary and those sorts of things are going to be more appealing to another team, presumably.
So he... Vermes would need somebody to make an offer that he thinks is worthwhile, and two, he has to feel like he can get rid of him and still have somebody to cover that spot. So Graham Smith last year went in the doghouse after playing with Emiliano Amor in that one Open Cup game, but seemed to work his way back into favor because he played a lot at Swope Park and even started wearing the armband at Swope Park. So I think he might be back in favor, or at least not as in the doghouse as he used to be. And he wasn't released outright, so
yeah, that's what I was going to say. If he was still in the doghouse, he would have gone with he would have either gone with Amir Yidich or Amir Yidich would have stayed and Graham Smith would have gone.
Yeah.
Hey, we're not on the outs yet. I'm just trying to keep you in line.
Yeah, well, it doesn't work.
That never works.
So anyway, you'd need to have some good reason to get rid of him, and you'd need to. I'm not just good reason to get rid of him, but you need to have. Everything covered.
Okay, on the other end of the field, Kellen Rowe.
That's the secret to winning the MLS Cup right there.
Why'd you whisper that? Was that your hot take?
Yes.
Or was that sarcasm? I couldn't tell.
No, actually, well, it's a little both, but
okay,
because I don't really believe in hot takes. But
another guy that can put the ball in the net
and can play a lot of different spots and could be filling in for an old midfielder that Sporting has that isn't as offensive as Kellen Rowe can be. And
yeah, I think he is going to play a lot. I think he'll be very important to the squad.
So I know a lot of people hated on Roger Espinoza last year, and they were pretty much all wrong. But the one thing I'll say is he's better when he's got a little more rest. So you got to get him rest. Plus, you got to be able to cover Felipe Gutierrez also, and potential things that could happen with him. You know,
when hasn't Roger been talked bad about?
Yeah,
it's pretty much been a yearly thing from like a small majority of fans.
I think it is they're just loud.
Yeah, there we go. loud minority of fans who just see the contract size for Roger and are like, oh, he should be doing more on the field. He should be doing that. And there are people that don't seem to know everything that Roger does on the field, how good he is on the field for this team.
Well, I completely agree. We
hit that
how many times
a lot on the
yeah,
show
about how good Roger is. The only thing I'm saying is that, yeah, I do think he's better when he gets a little rest.
That's fair, especially turns 33,
yeah, exactly.
I believe, next season,
yeah.
if I remember right.
If that wasn't true in the past, then it definitely will be like this year and however long he's here.
Yeah, and trust me, I'm not wanting to get rid of Roger, even for the money right now, because of what he can do.
Because
when he is on, he can definitely make a huge impact in a game, and I don't think there's a direct equivalent to him anywhere that we could get for that amount of money right now. But on the flip side of it, he's not as offensive, so you lose a lot in that. I mean, last year was his best offensive year, and that may be because he's getting better, or it may just be because Sporting was...
Well, I think that came because of Gutierrez. With Gutierrez, you... it's not a double pivot because it's higher up the field, but it's a reverse, basically, where you don't have two players both playing the deep position. You had two players both playing the forward position. Espinoza would push up, Felipe would stay back, Felipe would push up, Roger would stay back. So it wasn't a direct pivot in the midfield. It was at the opposite end of the field on the offensive side. And I think with that, Roger in the past has had Benny Failhaber, Graham Zuzi playing with him in the midfield. Those are more offensive-minded players when it comes to the attack. So Roger would be the one that would hang back more, allowing those guys to get forward. Now with Gutierrez, they can trade off, and that I think, is the main reason for Espinoza's form last season in terms of production.
Not disagreeing, but not quite 100% agreeing. I think you're right, except that it's not totally that Gutierrez is there. I think it's just the maturation and the other players all around him, too, because you saw how much he combined with Russell, Zusi overlapping, Russell coming into the middle. I mean, Espinoza's at right back at different times. It was just that all the different players being there that was there. I mean, he wasn't playing with Connor Hallisey out on the side, or Brad Davis, who was too old to play, or, you know, we could probably run down a whole list of those options. So he had more assists also because Shaloui was cutting in from the other side, so he's cutting into that him, because I think first three or four Shaloui goals were assisted by Espinoza. A number of his goals were assisted by Espinoza. So it's that cutting in that direction. So it's just that the whole team was better offensively because of better players everywhere. So if you put in Kellen Rowe in that spot, for example, or Kellen Rowe as Felipe in Gutierrez's spot, I don't think it changes much as long as Rowe fits into the system.
Here we go. We finally brought it back around to Rowe. That's what I was waiting for.
Well, that's where I was going to come back to once that was finished up. But no, I like Rowe. I've liked Rowe for a while. I don't think you can look at his performance last season and see it as an indicator of his play. I think him and Friedel didn't mesh well in New England, and I like
he was one of a couple there that Friedel just decided decided quickly he wasn't going to play.
And Thad and I have talked about this in the past, is sometimes players just need a change of scenery.
The
one that comes up for me and for Thad and I talking about is the, speaking to New England, the Teal Bunbury trade.
Oh yeah, there
Teal
you go.
was fine here, he was good here, but he just needed a change of scenery. And I think Kellen Rowe just needed a change of scenery at this point, and I think he's going to do very well here. I think this is, you said Trader Pete earlier. I think this could turn out to be a steal of a trade for Sporting when you look at the all three players involved, because not only did we get Rowe, we got allocation money from the Rapids for it too.
We got them Garber bucks, baby.
So I mean, I don't know what New England saw in getting a Castillo for Rowe in the first place from Colorado, and I can understand the Rubio for Rowe trade from both Colorado's and our perspective, because Colorado seems to want to play with two strikers this year. I think Rubio's gonna have a very successful season with Kamara up top in Colorado. But the Rowe Rubio trade, total sense. I'm a little iffy on it because of the Hurtado, when it went with Hurtado seeming to be the starter, but I don't hate the move either. So
with Diego and Kai up top, I think they, like you said, they could be a very good combination as long as they can develop some chemistry together. They're possibly two very different players. So I think they will, but it could be one of those. It could also go tragically bad very quickly. And with the fine leadership in the back.
Wait. Things go tragically bad for a team with Kai Kamara on it. That everywhere but here, that sounds like a broken record.
So it repeats. It doesn't make it wrong.
No, that's what I'm saying, you just hit on a point that at some point outside of Kansas City, Kamara's not had a lot of success of staying out of trouble in the locker room. Let's just leave it at that.
He's had success on the field, and then it stops. And then he moves, and then he has success, and then it stops.
Yeah, that has to just sound weird to a lot of Sporting Kansas City fans who don't necessarily follow the rest of the league that closely. To hear that Kai Kamara could be difficult in some way, like that's the happiest man we've ever seen.
I know. I still love Kai, and it
really is just a weird situation in that he's had success goal scoring wise, at least in MLS, everywhere he's gone, but everywhere but Kansas City, he's been seen as a locker room cancer when he leaves. Everywhere. San Jose, Houston, Columbus again, New England, Vancouver. I mean, everywhere he's been seen as a... I'm sure if he'd have stayed in Cincinnati for more than 30 seconds, he would have been seen as locker room cancer when he left.
Yeah.
But, I mean, everywhere, I don't know what it is, but...
Yeah, and I still love Kai, and I would love to see him come back here and visit, but, not come back to play.
Yeah, but anyway, no... The Rowe Rubio trade, total sense, and we get Garber bucks out of it. I take that deal every single day of the week, even with the Hurtado Namath stuff up top. I take that deal every single day.
So even with a unproven center forward.
We still don't have a striker, but...
so neither one of Hurtado or Namath, I mean, if I'm going to be on the critical side at this point, which I wasn't earlier... But neither one of them is a guy who lights it up.
Well, let's just hold on. Let's just move this into the outgoing players, and let's just talk about Rubio. So continue your thought, Thad, because it was exactly what we were talking.
So with him gone, you know, we if neither one of them is going to light it up, is it still a good trade? I mean, we had an offense last year with Espinoza and Gutierrez. We didn't need another midfielder. I mean, because you got Crazé and Busio that can fill in that spot or actually do quite well there, Johan.
Well, falling. Yeah, and we didn't even talk about what the Rowe trade means for Johan. So, I mean, the midfield got very crowded, but again, it goes back to the Vermes point about wanting to be too deep everywhere on the field. Mm-hmm. So that I would hope that we're going to see more rotation from Peter this year, especially with our entire back line is going to be 30. No, Ike's 29. Or Ike's about to turn.
And Barath is 26.
Yes. But our starters from last year,
right,
either 29 or over 30. Our goalkeeper's over 30, which is like 21 in field player years. You have Elie, who's mid-upper 20s. Felipe, mid-upper 20s. Roger is the wrong side of 30 as it is. So we have a fairly old roster, even with the likes of Busio and Kuzain, yeah, and Lindsay.
Seasoned is what the word I'm going
to
use.
But anyway, back to Rubio and the his departure.
Yeah, I mean, that one was tough just because, you know, we're still talking about, do we have a striker? Not that even if he was here, we would probably still be having the conversation. But it was, you know, you can understand the hesitancy for people that are like, well, that was one guy that was scoring goals and we just got rid of him.
Well,
but yes, every point you made, Mike, of just, it's just a classic Trader Pete move. Couldn't turn it down. Got a lot in return. And I'm for it.
Well, and with Rubio, the question is, had he peaked here?
Right.
Was that his peak? Is his peak being that spot starter / come off the bench and score a goal sort of guy?
And along those lines, it's like, yes, that might have been his peak, but it was just, bottom line is, it was a perfect time to sell the guy.
No, it, like, yeah, you buy, yeah, low, sell high. Is, yeah, we're buying Kellen Rowe at a very low, at probably the low point of his career right now in terms of production. We sold Rubio on a high because I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I would venture to guess this was probably his most productive season, definitely in MLS, if not period, right, for his career at this,
yeah,
point.
I think all time also. But I don't always get into, I don't totally understand all the time, but the whole expected goal thing, right? Yeah. Everybody talked about how he scored way above expected goal rate. Now, I don't know, maybe he could keep that up forever, but there is a point where he seems like that won't happen, right?
In theory, you can't, technically, because how would, yeah.
I mean, in theory, you can, but it's not likely. And right, if you go back to the end of 2017, when people will still blame the end of 2017 on being too tired, but it wasn't that people were tired, it was that the entire team went cold. Nobody could freaking score. That one of those people being Rubio. Bailhopper. So nobody could score.
Right.
Yeah, and I think the other difference for 2018, while Rubio had 8 goals, I think, in league play for us, he didn't hit double digits. I think he had like 8, maybe 9. Yeah. But the way Vermes has the team set up now, the center forward doesn't need to score.
Right.
As long as Russell and, well, yes, that much.
They need to be a credible threat.
Yes.
Yeah.
They don't need to put it in every other game.
Yes, but the wings is where, at least last year in the system Vermes had, is where the goal scoring comes from. Either
by their foot or they create it from,
yeah,
the outside.
With Russell cutting in from one side, Shallowy from the other, that's where Sporting's goals were coming from last year. So on paper, in terms of goals, it hurts to lose Rubio. I think with the added offensive production from Rowe, I think you can get that production back from a combination of center forwards. I think, for as much as I ragged on Hurtado earlier, I think a combination of him and Namath can probably produce the same amount of goals that Shelton Rubio did last,
yeah,
year.
Yeah.
I don't see why they can't.
Should be at least close. And if Rowe can put in more than, say, Roger, or, you know, a combination of Gutierrez, Espinoza, and Rowe can put in more than a Gutierrez and Espinoza did last year, plus Johan. the greatest player in MLS.
Mike, you just mentioned Shalloway and Russell cutting inside. Have you guys watched, before we move on, I gotta mention this. Have you guys watched Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix?
Not yet, no.
Well, I did this on Twitter and no one went to check it out and see what it was. But in the second episode, as it's open, like the first words of the Johnny second Russell. Episode are Johnny Russell. And it's Johnny Russell cuts inside and it's like he sets up a goal to score on Sunderland. And seriously, watch this documentary. It's amazing. This documentary crew did this thinking, oh, this huge club, they just got relegated. It'll be this redemption story of them rising back to the Premier League. And this crappy club just has the worst season like in the history of soccer and gets relegated and they were just being followed by cameras the whole time. It's so funny. You have to watch it.
And it's on my list to watch.
Yeah.
As soon as I get Netflix.
Okay. All right, old man.
Hey, I got everything else. So.
Okay.
But that is Sporting's offense, okay? We were talking earlier about Gutierrez and Espinoza being the kind of the inverted double pivot, being up front instead of back. And I know we talked about this on the pod last year, but since we have you on here now, Mike, it's my contention that Sporting doesn't have a number 10. They have two number eights or eight and a halves or whatever you want to call them because they both basically play the box-to-box role. They both play an attacking role. Neither one of them is a true number 10 as in a guy that your offense is going to go through, as in a guy that's going to be your setup man, but they both have the capability to do it.
I would say that's true when it's Espinoza and Gutierrez on the field.
Yes.
When you put Johan in the midfield, when you put Busio in the midfield, when you presumably put Rowe in the midfield, they're going to sit a little bit deeper. The example I'll give, again, I don't have my numbers in front of me, but Espinoza, in my mind, went through a lull in the middle of the season where he wasn't producing goals or assists unless they were bangers from outside the box. And what did that coincide with? Gutierrez's absence from the lineup.
Yes.
So I think the lack of a 10 is only when those two are on the field, because it would, based off what I remember of the season, whoever played in place of Gutierrez was usually playing more forward and Espinoza was back more in his regular position or dropping all the way back to right back as Zuzi pushed up the field.
Or maybe they weren't farther forward. It was just Espinoza was making sure he was farther back to protect against Johan losing the ball or a 16-year-old losing the ball.
Yes.
And with Johan earlier in the season getting up to speed.
That's putting it nicely.
You got to know, Johan's like my favorite player, right? Best player in MLS.
You didn't say your normal line, yeah.
I did earlier. So anyway, Johan had the capability. It took him a while to adapt, where Felipe came in and just boom, hit the ground running and was, you know, one of the best players in the league right off the bat, and then had to recover and get back to his form. So I do think that what you're saying is accurate when he was out there with Gutierrez, but I just also think that you're with Busio. Yeah, he's the young kid you got to worry a little bit more about, who probably won't have to worry about for in the next year.
I wish we were worrying about him. I'd love to see Busio get more. Now, granted,
he'll be so good you won't have to worry about him. That's what. not that he won't get to play. But and Johan, who it seemed like everywhere he fit in the last 2 months, he did well. So I don't think he would be the worry for if he's fitting in like next to Gutierrez, you wouldn't have to worry about it as much as he would have in the first half of last year. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely.
Okay, let's finish up the rest of the outgoing players quickly. Okay?
You got the list?
I do.
Rapid fire.
Okay, let's start with Brad Evans. Good riddance, right? Thank you for your time here. Thanks for being the coach kind of in the locker room.
I don't want to talk long on Evans because the on-the-field aspect, it absolutely wasn't there, but I guarantee you he was the perfect guy to have in the locker room for this team. He I hate Seattle. I hate what they're about. But Evans, I always respected as a player just because of how he played, and having him here was less about him on the field and more about him in the locker room.
Yeah, you would have
been a locker room guy.
You would have fit right in on this pod last year.
And because there were so many people, it was bad-mouthing Evans and the whole deal. And I'm like, $200,000 wasn't a big deal for a guy that came in. And if he'd have played one game, you would have said it was justified. But what he taught on the field, and what was fun was watching some practices. It's harder to watch practices now, but the ones that you still got to watch, watching Evans, like Shelton and Rubio going up against Evans in training. And you can see the quality of how good of a defender he could be, how smart he was on the ball, and the way he positioned and everything. It made those guys better going up against him in practice. And the same could be said for the guys at Swope Park who were in those trainings and the kids that went against him. So he made players better.
All right. More than enough on Brad Evans. All right.
Rapid fire, man.
All of these people are good riddance anyway. We don't need to spend any time on any of them. Carlton Belmar. Actually, that one's kind of sad.
Good luck in Nashville.
Nashville is where he went. Amir Yiddich.
Wait. How well do you think he can come up with Nashville next year?
Rapid fire or not rapid fire? You said those words twice to me.
Fine. This is my one thing on Belmar. I still think he could be a decent depth signing for an MLS squad, especially an expansion side.
I agree with
that. I think he'll do fine. I think he'll score 10 to 12 goals next season for Nashville. He'll get signed to an MLS contract, and then we'll see what happens with him with Nashville.
Yeah, I liked him. I liked his game.
Yeah, and in the right MLS team, I think he could not be excessively great, but I think he could be adequate.
Adequate, great.
Come on.
All right, Amir Yiddich.
Good luck in San Antonio.
San Antonio.
Hell of a nice guy. Great story.
I thought he was the next center back. I always thought they were grooming him to be.
He just seemed a little slow, like not up in the head, just on the field. He was not a fast player.
Well, he positioned himself as to maybe be the number three guy, but then I think maybe stopped progressing.
I think, and that's the key right there, is he rapidly progressed from where because he played at
Baker.
Yeah, kind of came out of nowhere that year.
And he rapidly progressed up through Swope Park. And became,
he was all league his rookie season.
Right.
He was all USL.
Yeah, he was a good USL player, a really good USL player. He was not a good MLS player, and I just don't think he could go up against the big, the speedy guys.
He wasn't able to make that next jump. Like I said, good luck to him in San Antonio. I think he'll do well in a USL environment where that's where he is, that's his focus, instead of being both MLS and USL. I think he'll do fine there.
And he'll get plenty of playing time, and if for some reason he fails, he can move to Canada.
Christian Lobato.
I miss him. Actually, that's one of the guys I think that I wish would not have been let go. If I don't know his health, I don't know if he's going to recover and come back to being normal, whatever, you know, injuries he actually had, because he was wearing like double braces and stuff for a while.
Yeah.
But he had ability that I thought was really good, and it finally like showed up a few times. When he played before, I thought you could see the quality, and it just needed to taken another little tweak up, and it finally did, and then he was hurt, and now he's gone.
Well, go back and watch that season-long highlight of all the goals they scored this year, and you're like, oh yeah, he was like, he actually contributed for a while. I remember that guy.
Just don't put him back at left back.
Yeah. Okay, Colton Storm, another outside back that never was.
Yep, that sounds about good.
a pretty good USL player, a good USL defender. I don't know that he's going to be good enough MLS player.
I think Storm is the perfect example for what we're going to talk about in a little bit, which is the draft and the lack of importance of the draft as it's progressed. Storm was a weird pick from day one when you knew the club had Jalen Lindsay that they were going to sign, and had, at the time when he was drafted, still had Abdul Salam at right back, mm-hmm. and I think still had Amadou Dia at the same time still, I think. But either way, his drafting in the first place was just a weird timing thing, and I never really thought that he would break through. I know that sounds bad, but
really either.
He just never seemed like it was just a weird pick for me.
His best contribution to this club was when he was pranked by Peter Vermees.
Yes, that was the catfishing.
Mark from Cabo.
Yes. Yes. Mark from Cabo. Mark from Cabo, yes.
My gosh.
But I think actually what they may have thought, again, he was a potential Seth replacement because, like, they could convert him to a left back, and that didn't work very well.
But yeah, because he was a right back, and that was, I remember that at the time now that you say that. And it's like he's only ever played right back. Converting him to left back is going to be a disaster. And
well, it works for Lindsay.
Lindsay's more talented than Storm is, and Lindsay's also four to 6 years younger than Storm is. Storm is 24. Yeah, 6 years younger.
I know. I'm just saying it. You can't say it will never work, but I think that was part of the thought when he was drafted. I remember some armchair asshole saying that he would never be able to play left back. Vermees said he could play that. No.
No, I said he could never play left back.
It was the MLS guy.
Okay, fair enough.
That armchair asshole, who mostly I disagree with. Not mostly, but
we don't say his name on the show. Apparently,
I like Doyle. I like Matt Doyle.
He's not wrong.
He has points that make sense for other teams, but he has this thing with Sporting Kansas City. He has like a thing with this team that he doesn't like.
See, I don't see that because he's the one that after the road trade was again praising Vermees for schooling everybody again.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying he's wrong all the time, and I'm not saying he's got a thing against Sporting. He just had a thing for Johan last year.
At the very least,
and in a game where Johan's the best player on the field and he's still talking about how bad of a deal.
Well, the thing with that is the same thing that bugs me with it is the fact that it's a. It bugs me and it doesn't because the DP tag does not have the implications that it used to in the league. Not precisely. With all the TAM, not with all the GAM, but at the same time, it's still the DP tag still has a stigma on it. And Johan had that tag and he's not producing at what you expect for a DP.
Right. But then when those mid-season salaries came out, we found out he's like the eighth highest paid on the team, or like seven or eight players on the team that make more money than him. So,
yeah, and some of that you still don't know. So anyway,
Storm.
Yeah, thanks. We had to revert back.
He was talking about fire.
He was talking about how
why
he could
are we
never
still talking about him.
Because we never got off of the subject.
I had said when Thad said I was like, yep, that's good enough.
You guys, and that is so difficult to get to stop talking about something. Like, he's such a friendly guy. He will talk to you forever about something. He's got a lot to say, and
he'll
bullshit. Say it.
That's bullshit. But I'm going to get my point across.
Yeah, that's bullshit. Whenever we're leaving, we're out of the parking lot after leaving this podcast. We'll see how that goes.
So what you're saying is you're not friendly? No,
I do. That's why I like how friendly you are. I like it.
Anyway, it was Doyle saying that he could never be a left back, and Vermees thought he could try it. He played it in the combine and was mediocre in the combine because I remember watching that game and going because I went back and watched the whole thing when he played that, and it was kind of like he had a couple of good moments and had a couple of moments. So I think that's where Storm was, and I think that's why they drafted him, was the attempt to make him a left back.
Okay, he's gone forever, though. So, what are you showing me?
Just the last person we need to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Because
he wasn't on the transaction list, so.
Yes, but Kyrie Shelton appears to be officially gone. Another club has introduced him as their own, so I assume he's gone.
No, yeah, he's officially signed.
Yeah.
With Paderborn?
Paderborn in Bundesliga 2 signed him officially, although he hurt his knee in practice, and some of the stuff makes it sound like it may be a long-term ligament injury, which sucks for him.
Yeah, that really is unfortunate.
But, well, and that's the second long-term injury he's had, correct? He had one with New York, and then he had to recover, and then he never, because they expected him to be better, so I can't remember what the injury was.
I can't remember what it was from when he was with NYCFC, but yeah, he's apparently hurt again, unfortunately, because the kid from UCLA they signed played in the friendly that they had, and Shelton didn't, and then it came out after the fact that Shelton did something to his knee.
Which, again, he's one heck of a nice guy, really nice guy, so I wish him well.
Yep. Good luck to him. Hopefully he recovers quickly and has success in the Bundesliga and then comes back to MLS and we can make more AM by trading him to whoever wants to keep him because we have his MLS rights.
I like how you dropped the first letter of the one just went with AM. I like that.
It's easier than saying TAM and GAM.
All right, very quickly, Swell Park Rangers added two players, and I'm just going to confidently say their names, and we're going to just say that I said them right. Ayub Alak and Jerome Ngom Mbekele. I was confident for a while.
you kind of crashed and burned on that last one.
There's three names. Come on. And the
you
last
crashed and burned on...
The last one's intimidating.
You crashed and burned Mbekele. On the last name.
Mbekele.
Yeah. The only thing I'll say about this is... I like the age of the players. Both of them are 20.
And 20.
So I like this is what the Rangers are for, bringing in young kids that maybe years ago you would have brought in on just a trial with Sporting, and if they were good, you signed them. If they weren't, you kicked them out. Now you bring them to Rangers. They spend a season with Rangers. If they're still good, they either stay with Rangers for another year to develop or they move up to Sporting. So this is what they're for. Not that I don't appreciate what Haji Berry did last year or
Belmar.
Well, but Belmar came in as 23 and then got signed to Sporting. So Belmar's what I see as a Swope success story moving up to the first team. But honestly, actually, Barry's about the only one of the older players that were specifically on Swope contracts last year that I felt had adequate seasons. So, but yeah, like guys like Minter, I can't think of the other guys that were older that were on the roster last year. I blanked them out of my
Parker Mayer.
Mar, yeah, but Mar was there the year before.
Yeah, I mean, his name was
but there was somebody else that was there that I'm blanking on. But
Akhmatov.
No, he's still fairly young, isn't he?
He's like 24 now.
Either way, I like the aspect of bringing in the young kids and playing them. That's what I want to see more of. Less of the 25-plus-year-old guys being...
Guatemalan guy.
Yes, thank you.
I can't think of his name.
Yes, that's who I'm thinking of.
The Guatemalan guy who went back to Guatemala.
Yes.
Or somewhere.
Well, and then there was another guy who didn't play a whole or came on as a sub a lot. But anyway, I like the youth. I want to see more young players supplemented with older players from Sporting coming down to get time, and maybe at most 1 to 2 older players on USL contracts to be the locker room guys. The rest of it should be academy kids, should be young kids that would normally just get trials, and young kids on Sporting contracts.
And who that's cares if they make the playoffs?
Exactly. That's what the Rangers are for. The Zoo will hate me for saying that, but that's what the Rangers are for.
Yeah, totally agree. The only caveat I'll say is I don't mind a couple of the older guys who you're just seeing if maybe they have something in there. And the other factor is they're just a depth in case somebody gets hurt on the first team.
But they can't come up on that 25-plus have to be signed to a first-team
contract.
I know.
I'm just saying.
They cannot just come up on
But you would have
loans.
Them there so that if, like, in the middle of the year, Seth got hurt and couldn't play, you could sign a Parker Meyer last year or a Justin Bilyeu this year to bring him up to have that other depth. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying they're, like, a loan contract because that's not the case. Because that's a rare occurrence where you can even borrow them except for open cups and stuff like that. So that's all I'm saying is, like, those older guys would be that extra depth.
I'm just going to stop saying we're going to do things quickly.
I tried to be quick, and he kept talking.
Because I needed to add on to what you said.
You can tell it's off season. We haven't gotten together in a long time. People got a lot of things to say.
So, moving on.
Right, so I'm like hesitant to even bring it up because we're going to talk about it for 30 minutes, but the Super Draft, it's non-existent, right?
I told you guys this beforehand. I have three names to read off. Ben Lundgaard, Brandon Aubrey, and Chase Minter.
And collectively, all of you listeners should have been like, who?
Exactly. Except for maybe Chase Minter if you're a Swope Park Rangers fan. Those are the three players taken in 2018, 2017, and 2016 at the 21st pick. We're sporting picks on in the draft tomorrow as it is when we're recording this. So don't expect anything other than a Swope signing out of this pick.
Hey, man, Tom Brady was drafted in the something-somethingth round.
NFL and MLS are completely different, though, man. That's the only way to get players in the NFL.
So is MLS from 2001 when Davey Arnold was taken in the sixth round and MLS in 2019.
Just 5 years, man. Just the last 5 years, it's changed a lot on the quality of players coming up in college.
Is there,
because of the academies.
Is there like anyone that is a big name that is going to get taken? Like, is there a Jack Harrison player that's in this draft that like people have been waiting to graduate?
There are a couple U20 players in the draft that that will be well long off the board by the time we pick, so it's not going to matter for us.
I just mean for the sake of the draft. Like, is there like any exciting player that all the teams are wanting to?
Not. There's not one consensus number one pick this year. No.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the draft's not going anywhere.
Right.
You're the one. There's everybody's not in academies, so you're going to have some way to disperse those players because, as it is, the players' union isn't going to allow new players to have more freedom than the players that are already part of the union. So, I mean, you're not going to give the college kids free agency to sign anywhere they want when Matt Beisler could have been a free agent. So that's not a good one. Kyrie Shelton, Daniel Shalvey, those guys don't have the free movement within MLS when their contracts are up. So the players' union isn't going to give that to new players just coming in and be like, oh, yeah, those kids can go wherever they want, while our players that have been in the league for 6 years have to sit on their butts and wait for somebody to trade their player rights.
I understand your point, but at some point it won't matter that much because those guys won't be playing anyway.
No, it won't, but the players' union will want more free agency for their existing players before they give it to the drafted players, is what I mean.
And I agree with that, and I'm okay with that, and the draft will be around for a long time. It just will matter less and less every single year.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, well, let's see. 2017 was Colton Storm. 2018 was Graham Smith and Eric Dick. Now, both of them are still on the roster, which is more than you can say for 2/3 of the players taken in the first two rounds, I would guess, last year.
Yeah, this draft is like an asymptote. Like, it's always going to be there. It'll progressively get worse and worse, but it'll never actually bottom out.
Be like a what?
An asymptote. No? Okay. You make me feel like a nerd. An asymptote. A line, like a math line.
It's a slowly decreasing.
You know, like always.
Occasionally have the Generation D display. Because what will happen is the best talent will always get plucked every single year as Generation Adidas. The players that the U20s, the U17s, the U19s that are in college will get plucked out before they even get to their senior year.
And I think even those guys will start being more and more rare because while not everybody will be in an academy, but pretty soon I'm pretty sure they're going to open up academies to just bringing in players from all over. You can already do it if they're not in an academy spot, i.e. Busio, Lindsay, et cetera.
Well, yeah, they've talked about somebody had talked about how MLS was thinking of getting rid of the homegrown territories.
Yeah, and they might leave like, okay, you can name three players or, you know, something like that can't move.
Or a small distance, like kind of like what New York and the Galaxy have, where they have like a certain mile radius of their stadium.
Yeah, like so 50 like, miles.
Yeah. So like gone maybe the days of Sporting having Kansas, Missouri, and Oklahoma as their grounds. Nobody can recruit there, basically.
Well, I think it won't even be the 50 mile kind of thing, but they might be able to select a few players or something like that. They've already allowed a larger number per age group, because it used to be like one. Now it's like five or something per age group can be from out of territory. So it's just going to keep changing. So as that does, when a kid's 16 and potentially a U17 national team player, he's not going to be not in an academy somewhere. Somebody's going to come say, hey, come on over here, free room and board, good training, potential signing with a pro team. Come on.
Unless you're DC and you're still forcing kids to pay for your academy. Well.
Okay. Before we wrap up, let's just look at the upcoming schedule before the start of the season. We've got everything kicks off next Friday, a week from now. I'm going to say now.
For preseason games.
Yeah.
You lost me for a second on where we were, what was going
Friday,
on next
January
Friday.
January 18 is when we officially kick off. And then, what is it, just over a month after that, we are supposed to play a very competitive game against a Mexican side in the CONCACAF Champions League. And that one for me is just every single year. It's like when you qualify for the Champions League, it's like, yes, we have a chance. But then like when this time comes, it's like, God dang it. Like how in the hell is an MLS team supposed to compete in this?
Well, we can thank all the other teams that were in the U.S., whatever seed we got in the U.S. that forced us to be in Pot B and have to face a Mexican League team in the first round.
Well, being in that pot makes sense to me, right? Because we're the
wouldn't it technically,
lesser competition to qualify.
Shouldn't it have been Houston then that got that spot?
Why?
Because they were the lesser competition to win it because they won the 2018 and they finished lower than us in the regular season.
Over but they years. Won it more recently.
But they had fewer points than us over the last 2 years, yeah. Which is how New York got in.
Oh, so they do look at that.
Well, yes and no. They did kind of. This past year because of the change in format.
Yeah.
When it went to all in one calendar year.
Oh, yes, for this
year.
Odd first year they were looking at that.
This is the second year of this format, but.
But.
For what they did is they took the 17 Open Cup, 18 Open Cup. When Toronto won MLS Cup, it was supposed to be the two MLS Cup winners as well, but when Toronto won it, it became the MLS Cup winner in 2018, and the team with the most points in 2017 and 2018.
I see.
That wasn't already qualified.
That wasn't already qualified, because it would have been Atlanta if Portland had won MLS Cup.
CONCACAF, baby!
So
yeah!
Sporting got screwed just because of the way it was this time.
Yes. But on a happier note, all this four teams that made the Champions League were the same four teams that would have made it if they had just done the 1 year, which was kind of weirdly odd.
That was good. They would have been in different spots, though.
They would have been in different spots, but all four of them made it again. Which
Sporting would have been playing somebody from Guatemala.
Probably,
or,
yeah.
Whatever.
Or the Dominican Republic or wherever. But
I'm stuck on Guatemala at the moment.
Either way, I'm looking forward to it. I don't have high expectations for it because I think oddly we have a good record at home against Mexican League sides. I think if I remember right, we've only lost one game, and that was a Super League game.
Beat Cruz Azul.
Yeah. No, that's what I mean. We've only lost one home game against a Mexican League side. We've beaten Santos Laguna at home. We've tied Santos Laguna at home. We've lost two. We lost to Santos Laguna twice, now that I think about it. But we have a good record at home. On the road, we suck down in Mexico. Our last two trips were 2 goals and 11 against, I want to say, from the Cruz Azul game and then Morelia back in 2002. So we don't travel well, and we're going to Toluca, which is like 8,000 feet above sea level.
Yikes.
Yeah. With having very little preparation.
Well, I am inclined to believe that Vermees is one coach that is going, that I'm more confident than other coaches in MLS that he will have his team ready.
I don't know that I'm more comfortable than most other coaches, but I'm comfortable that he'll have them as ready as he can.
Yeah.
But it's still going to be a crappy situation because you're going to be facing a Mexican team that's at least recently played in your...
Toluca will have played five or six, I think, games before we play them. Five or six league games before the Champions League.
And Sporting will have played one or two MLS teams, a USL team, and a bunch of trialists, a bunch of college players and themselves.
Exactly.
So it won't have been a ton of preparation. The flip side to that is you have guys like Johnny frickin' Russell.
And also that Sporting Kansas City always seems to win games you think they're going to lose. And they lose games that they should win.
So I'm fairly confident they'll put out a decent performance on the brand new field at Sporting at Children's Mercy Park.
Yeah, no, I think they'll put out a good performance at home. It's the away leg that has me concerned that it'll turn into another Cruz Azul.
And then like 3 days later, starting the season.
Yes, and 3 days later, we're in L.A. to face LAFC.
Yeah, so that's the other bad factor to this whole thing is if they go in and go all out for winning the game in Toluca, then you're sacrificing some opening the season.
Like they did last year with a loss.
But at the same time, it's on the road in a location that you're not expected to get a result in at LAFC. So at the same time, if you can win it, I think it's one of those situations where if it's starting to get bad, you pull a couple guys who you know you're going to need on Sunday in LA and just say, okay, we're punting.
I don't know if I like the place you're not expected to get a result. I think I expect them to get a result as in at least a tie in most places, not everywhere. But LA isn't like scary enough to me that I'm like, okay, we just sacrifice that game.
But, well, I'm not saying you sacrifice the game. I'm saying
I know you're not saying sacrifice
doesn't
it, but
hurt. But at the same time, we were the only team to beat LA at home in league play last year.
Yeah.
So it's not like LA is an easy place to go play. They play well at home. So I don't want to say I'm okay with a loss, but a loss isn't going to surprise me in LA. So if we can somehow go to Toluca and get a result, and if getting a result means we lose in LA, I don't care. I'm fine with that.
If we win in Toluca, I'm okay with losing in LA. We'll go with that.
Okay. We'll do another podcast where we can discuss all of this. Hopefully we'll be
promise?
Yeah, and we'll be at full strength. We'll get Atreus back in here. She was supposed to be here, but the Apple Store has prevented her from being here.
And the pointy ball team.
And Bob, I don't know what Bob was doing. Bob was unavailable tonight.
Something with his daughter.
But we'll have another one and we can discuss the Champions League game. And we can discuss the home opener. Okay. Any final words?
The off season's too long.
Too long? God, it was like 2 weeks, wasn't it?
It was quick. Next year will be even longer off season though.
Yeah, it'll be an actual off season.
So
it's gonna be too long an off season.
Okay, but we can again. We'll talk about that in another pod.
So, anyway, kudos to Peter for getting all those transactions done right off the bat and getting that done. Hopefully, he can still add another player.
Don't tweet at Mike and ask him when we're gonna sign a striker.
Actually, I recommend tweeting Mike and asking him when they're going to sign a striker or why they're still playing Roger Espinoza, because obviously that's a thing.
All right, so
keep tweeting him.
Keep tweeting him, Mike, and until next time, go Sporting.
That was weak.
I had to do the woo myself.
Skipper has just been sent off. Support is strong, it all comes off. My foot Fontaine's got me drinking. My foot Fontaine's got me drinking. My foot Fontaine's got me drinking. Give me beer, I'll win. ocean. Anything to shake, that's what I'm in. My foot patins got me drinking. My foot patins got me drinking. My foot patins got me drinking.